is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel. Fear and Loathing and Treason, Part 1. For years, thousands of Africans and other non-whites have been invading Europe, crossing the Mediterranean Ocean by boat. Rather than turning these boats around or simply sinking these invaders, European security forces, ostensibly sworn to protect their countries from invasion, have been increasingly more likely to rescue the invaders, to help them ashore, feed them, and release them to do as they please in Europe. Why do European governments permit this invasion? I'm sure the details and the incidents and the legal arguments are complicated and confusing. But to put it simply, it happens for the simple reason that the invaders aren't officially regarded as invaders. Instead, they're described as innocent victims, as refugees, as migrants, who are just looking for a better life for themselves and their families. The simple reason for that is treason. The governments are operated, controlled, by aliens and their indigenous traders, who demonstrate by their words and deeds that they place the interests of these alien invaders above the indigenous Europeans. And there are several specific examples taken from the Jews media recently that I'll point out and remark on. A story from The Guardian, good Orwellian name there, is right in the title of the article. UN expert, rich countries must take in 1 million refugees to stop boat deaths. We know that a great number of Syrians in particular are going to leave these countries, and if we don't provide any official mechanism for them to do so, they will resort to smugglers. The inaction of Europe is actually what creates the market for smugglers, said Francois Crapaud, a law professor at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. He speaks in terms of we. This is a good thing to look out for, to see the kind of tricks that are played with words. He implicitly identifies himself collectively with the Europeans, even though he's a university law professor at McGill University in Canada. You might assume that he's French Canadian from his name, but I wouldn't be so quick to assume that. I, in fact, would assume he's part Jewish, from the way that he's thinking and the position that he holds, the position of power at the UN, to dictate to Europeans what they should do, even though it's obviously against their own interests to do it. In fact, when I searched a bit for some information about this Crapaud, what I found out is that he's the Hans and Tamar Oppenheimer Professor in Public International Law at McGill. You don't find a more Jewish name than Tamar Oppenheimer. He was appointed UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Migrants. So in his very job description, in his very job title, is the pro-alien bias that I'm talking about here, against Europeans and for the rights of migrants. He talks about how the inaction, he describes it as inaction creates a market for smuggling. That's a one way of putting it, a very economical, money-based way of putting it. But there's no doubt that the invaders want to get into Europe because they see value for themselves in Europe. It's put right out there that they are looking for a better life for themselves and that they'll even pay and go to great lengths to get themselves there. They'll risk death on the open ocean to do it. The official mechanism for dealing with invasions in the past has been borders, border defense, immigration and naturalization laws. And the idea is to make the attempt to invade too costly for the invaders to do so. Obviously, that's not being done because the invaders still see that in the end, they will profit from coming to Europe. Despite all of the rhetoric about race and hate in Europe. Also, in that little bit I read there, he talks about Syrians coming to Europe. That Syrians in particular are going to want to leave. But the boat people that this recent crisis has been about are Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, blacks from the pictures that they've been showing, not Syrians. Although Syria looms large in the refugee, the constant flow of refugees out of Syria ever since there's been a civil war going on there for the last few years. Continuing another section from the article here. On Monday night, one of the leading smugglers at the main departure point, they're interviewing a smuggler here to get his point of view for this article in The Guardian, the misnamed Guardian. On Monday night, one of the leading smugglers at the main departure point for Mediterranean migrant crossings in Libya scoffed at plans to launch a military campaign. Quote, what are they going to do? Put two frigates here, two warships in Libyan waters? That's an invasion, the smuggler told The Guardian. Note the bald-faced inversion of the reality there. Calling the smuggler a smuggler of migrants rather than an enabler of invaders. And calling the people who are trying to defend themselves from an invasion, calling the invadees invaders. It's in your face. And it has this psychological effect. The trick, the way it works, I think, is basically to put people on the defensive, to put the reader, any European who's reading this, instead of thinking to themselves, hey, I'm the one being invaded here. My continent is being invaded. I'm the one being harmed. This rhetoric in the media in favor of the migrants is putting Europeans on the defensive. It makes Europeans not think of themselves as being harmed, as being the victims, and instead that these other people are the victims. This view that they're marinated in constantly from the media and from their own government officials, from the UN. The most obvious solution to the invasion is to put a stop to it. But the Jews media and the traitors who actually control the government won't even call it an invasion, much less advocate putting an end to it. Another paragraph or two from this article. Crapo said that the West had to acknowledge the refugees were, quote, stuck in a place where there's no future for themselves or their children, unquote, and had to change policy. Quote, this is going to be a long-term commitment and we should go at it together. It's a much better system for everyone. You reduce the number of deaths, you reduce the smuggling business model, and you reduce the cost of asylum claims. Now here he's acting like he's advocating on behalf of everyone, what's good for everyone. But it's simply a lie. His job title describes it. He's actually advocating for the best interests of the migrants. The fact is that open borders for Europe or any country really means no future for the people who already inhabit that country. In this case, it means no future for Europeans or their children. It won't be good for Europeans or their children. Again, the trick that this Crapo is using is to talk about we, in terms of we. All of the benefits that he cites, the supposed benefits, are things that would actually happen if they stopped the smuggling by any means, including by sinking the boats. Then all of these things, the reduction in deaths, the reductions in smuggling, the reductions in cost of asylum claims, all of those would go down. His answer, which is just to welcome more people, would actually increase it all. So this is an example not of someone who's confused, but someone who's using a deliberately confusing and inverted argument. He's citing the benefits to support his own policy or what he's advocating, even though it's exactly the opposite. The argument or the justification supports the opposite of what he's advocating. Now, who is this rapporteur, this UN rapporteur, Crapo? Just a few months ago, he was in the news in December of 2014 in an article titled UN Rapporteur Francois Crapo has a very rude word to describe UK's attitude to migrants. This also had to do with the boat invasion, and a UK politician apparently had said something along the lines of, well, we shouldn't be picking them up. And so this is Crapo reacting to that. He said, or at the top of the article, it says, the idea that British culture is under threat from migration is, quote, fantasy, unquote, and bullshit. And then the direct quote of Crapo is, the fantasy here is that there is a core British culture that was created probably 2,000 years ago and carried on, and now it's being threatened by all those barbarians that are coming to our gate. This is utter bullshit, but who is going to say this? That is why I think we have a problem with political conversations that we can't have. Again, note the way he's arguing here, as if he's powerless and nobody's allowing him to speak, and it's really quite the opposite, that the people who want to advocate for Britain and Britons are the ones who are actually criminalized and sent to jail if they speak out. And some do, and go to jail anyway for it. But the reality is that the law punishes those who would speak in defense of the Britons, not people like this Crapo, who's using words like barbarians and bullshit and is obviously not sympathetic to Britons or Europeans generally. Further on in the article, it says, and of the European search and rescue mission, he said, quote, not supporting search and rescue operations means letting them die. This is what happens. If you don't search and rescue them, they die. If we accept that, I think we go well beyond the moral boundaries of our political system. This little bit is very interesting in that he directly implicates the morality that's behind his own position. And what is really at the root of this is, what is the right thing to do? What is the wrong thing to do? He's trying to advocate that the right thing to do is not just for Britons to be indifferent about aliens, but that Britons and Europeans more generally must actually help them, must go out of their way to pick them up at sea and deliver them to their own countries, to give away their own countries. This is makes it very explicit here what this UN rapporteur is advocating. And he's arguing that this is actually what the moral boundaries of our current political system demand. I think he's right about that. I think that that's what's really behind what's going on, is this anti-white narrative that says that white people really have only one responsibility, which is to give away everything that they have to non-whites. Stop arguing about it. Stop resisting. Stop even being, stop doing nothing. That's not good enough. You have to actively participate in your own undoing. Another article triggered by this boat thing was in Vox.com by someone named Dylan Matthews. The title of his article was, the only real solution to Europe's migrant crisis is to let everyone in. I think in a lot of these cases of these articles, the punch is really right in the title. The point is made very clearly right in the very title of the article. You don't even really have to dig into what's said in the article. But here's what Dylan Matthews argues. He says, so why doesn't Europe solve this problem by just letting people stay? The case that immigration hurts rich countries like those in the EU economically is so weak that even opponents tend not to make it. The case that it hurts low-skilled workers is heavily disputed and, in any case, addressable through transfer programs with rich countries. The economic case against immigration only makes sense if you're willing to put negative weight on the well-being of foreigners. And evidence that migration to Europe increases crime is sparse, with some studies even finding that areas with more migrants experience less crime. For such a poorly supported policy, we sure put a lot of effort into maintaining it. The rich world spends billions of dollars every year on armed guards and planes and drones to make sure that the global poor stay poor. It wasn't always this way. U.S. and European borders were more or less open until the outbreak of World War I, and it doesn't have to be this way in the future. We can, if we want to, quote, fast forward to the world of the future, where everyone can enjoy a first world standard of living, unquote, as Brian Kaplan puts it. The argument that he's making here is, again, similar to Crapo's. It's an inversion of reality. It's paying lip service to what people, what really motivates people and people value, which is wealth and health and well-being, security. But it's misdirecting it. It's actually arguing against those ends for Europeans, and that they need to give whatever health and wealth they have, share it at least, with these people who want to come to Europe and share in it, which means take it, really, from Europeans. And he just deliberately lies. He flat out lies to support this argument that he's making, that it won't increase crime. In fact, he actually claims it will decrease crime in some places, and that it's actually economically good, which he doesn't offer any links, any support, any statistics. It's because that's not really what it's about. It's just about making these assertions and bluffing, really, through the unreality of what he's arguing. If it's such a poorly supported policy, this idea that not helping migrants, well, then why are there also all of these articles about the rise of racism and anti-Semitism and far-right nationalism in Europe? That actually is the groundswell that Europeans are sick and tired of these treasonous leaders that they have. And they're beginning to understand that they have to do something about it, that they can't just sit back. Otherwise, Europe really will disappear. Europe and Europeans will be driven to extinction by what's happening. I'm not surprised that this Dylan Matthews quotes Brian Kaplan. Brian Kaplan, for those of you who don't know, is an anarcho-capitalist. He's an economist who supports open borders everywhere. Just open the borders. That's the basic blanket solution to all the world's problems, is just let people go wherever they want to go. He's half Jewish for sure. And Dylan Matthews, I'd suspect, is some part Jew or another, based on other articles that he's linked and the way he talks about Jews, you know, in favor of Jews and Jewish interests, while being utterly hostile to white European interests. Later in his article, he actually refers to this UK government official that talked about the boat rescue thing. He writes, the UK government even refuses to fund search and rescue missions, arguing that they cause, quote, an unintended pull factor, encouraging more migrants to attempt the dangerous sea crossing and thereby leading to more tragic and unnecessary deaths. Well, I'll just point out that that's even putting it in terms of what's best for the migrants. That supposed defense of Britain and Europe more generally is actually trying to play along with this idea of morality, that it's always what's best for non-whites that's most important. But this Dylan Matthews is having none of it. He says that's not just a morally barbaric position. It's a self-defeating one that will leave Europe poorer and ensure dangerous sea crossings continue for years to come. Again, just a bald assertion of the unreality that he's arguing. It's the opposite, of course, of the truth. Although the use of the word morally barbaric there, the term morally barbaric is he's pushing the right button. He realizes that behind all of this is the moral rationale, the moral argument. And he's trying to tell Europeans, you have to do this because otherwise you'll defeat yourselves. He's telling them to defeat themselves. They must participate actively in the defeat of themselves. Otherwise they'll defeat themselves. It's a nonsense, inverted argument. The whole idea behind this is that bad is whatever is bad for non-whites. You know, he referred to it earlier in his arguments by saying the only way you can think that this is the right thing to do, keeping them out, is if you assign a negative weight to the well-being of foreigners. Well, that's a clue as to what he's actually doing. He's assigning a negative weight to the well-being of Europeans. And here he's actually calling Europeans who don't want to help the aliens come to Europe barbarians, rather than the barbarians, of course, who even Crapaud referred to the idea that the Europeans were not the barbarians. It was the barbarians that they wanted to keep out. This use of words here being inverted is a real sign that there's something rotten in all of this in this word play and this morality play that's going on here. Now, here we come to our own side, supposedly, in this. And I see the suicide meme coming into play here. It's an article from VDare by James Kirkpatrick, someone who's ostensibly on our side against the migrants. The title of his article is about Dylan Matthews. He writes, Vox's Dylan Matthews, ending Europe forever is the only solution to the migrant crisis. It's also simple. It is simple, actually. European institutions and standards of living can be indefinitely maintained, even when the population that created those institutions and standards of living is completely replaced and rendered politically powerless. And if you are a reporter or a, quote, thought leader, unquote, it really is this obvious, because anyone who says otherwise gets fired. Of course, as Matthew notes, Europe still does have border security and armies. Few actually believe annihilating European populations with more finality than any military conquest could is a good idea, but they have no moral vocabulary to argue against it, at least not without facing social, financial, and even legal costs. So hypocrisy and poorly defined, quote, common sense, unquote, is the only thing holding back the West from fully embracing suicide. But that can only slow down the process. My guess is you'll see a bigger push for open borders as a result of all this. And one can't help but wonder if enabling the endless flood from the Third World is one of the reasons pro-immigration politicians launched the disastrous intervention in Libya to begin with. Anyway, it's funny how people sworn to destroy us recognize mass immigration from the Third World as a weapon, even as our leaders tell us that it is a strength. Maybe someone should just send ISIS a link to Vox. He's referring there to the fact that ISIS and other enemies of Europe, outward, pretty much explicit enemies of Europe, have threatened to unleash migrants, invaders, into Europe in order to harm Europe. The implication being that Europe would be harmed by that. And Muammar Gaddafi did it before he was overthrown. And since he's been overthrown, that's exactly what's happened. They have been coming in mostly via ones who come in via Libya. What I don't like about Kirkpatrick's argument here, obviously, is he describes it well enough, what's going on, and then but oddly, as if he's not thinking it all the way through, calls it suicide, as if Europeans are doing this to themselves. And I take issue with that. I have in the past, and look up a suicide meme and you'll find my argument about that. But it's pretty obvious that this is being advocated by people who don't care about other Europeans, whether they're not Europeans themselves or they're not affected by these policies. It's not about killing themselves. It's about advocating that one group of people should be given preference over another group of people, and their own identification is up either above it all, outside of it all, or explicitly in favor of the migrants over the Europeans that they're advocating against. It's not suicide, in other words. Now, a Swedish politician, a member of the European Parliament from Sweden, also got some attention about this boat thing in an article titled "Swedes will compare this to the Holocaust," you know, supposed with quotes around it, supposedly quoting this Swedish politician. A Swedish MEP is stepping up a pan-European cross-party campaign for, quote, legal and safe routes to Europe, unquote, for migrants in the wake of the latest Mediterranean boat disaster. You know, the again, about this language, calling them migrants rather than invaders, and here calling it a Mediterranean boat disaster. You know, the Mediterranean boat disaster is these boats coming across the Mediterranean. The fact that one of them sank recently and a bunch of the invaders died is what the Jews media and all of these traitorous European politicians are upset about. They're advocating in favor of the invaders, calling them migrants and refugees, and saying how we should consider it a disaster that their boats sink. It's an inversion of reality. The name of this politician from Sweden is Cecilia Wikström. Again, I hesitate to call her a Swede because I really don't know what she is. I mean, looking at her picture, she looks Nordic, but who knows who she's married to and what her background is. I don't speak Swedish, and so it's very difficult to go and search for information about her, but you don't really need to because it's in the title and it's in the first paragraph of the article, what her rationale is. And her rationale is Jewish. She says, "I think that my children and my grandchildren are going to ask why more wasn't done to help people running away from ISIS or violence in Eritrea or wherever, when we knew that people were dying in their thousands. People will ask the same question they did after the war. Quote, if you were aware, why didn't you do something?" Unquote. In Sweden, we allowed our railroads to be used to transfer Jews to Nazi death camps. So there it is. She didn't use the word Holocaust. She just described her thinking behind this. And again, it's this bizarre thinking that she's going to be having children and grandchildren that are going to ask her why they didn't do more, why she didn't do more to help these alien invaders come to Sweden and take over Sweden. It's very likely that her children, or at least her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren, if she has any, will curse her for doing this to them, for delivering this disaster to Sweden and to Europe. They should. That's how they should see it, because their own interests are being harmed by her actions. Again, it's not suicidal so much. It's not herself that she's damning or dooming. It's her own children and grandchildren. And she's arguing that what she's trying to do is to not damn her children and grandchildren. She's got the right idea in her mind, is to do something that doesn't, that her children and grandchildren won't be ashamed of, won't dislike her for, won't hate her for. It's up to them ultimately to make that call, but I would think that they're going to condemn her for what she's doing, not for what she says they would. Her campaign is attracting growing support from across political bloc boundaries, with fellow MEPs such as Germany's Brigitte Sippel and France's Sylvie Guillaume also supporting her. I read that because to make the point that it's not just this one Swedish politician. It's actually from across Europe. These traitors are not just concentrated in one place in Europe. And they have political power. They're members of the European Parliament. They're members of the local governments as well. And I mention that because, again, on our own side, I see comments from people supposedly aligned with Europeans and in favor of Europeans, that if they don't call it suicide, they say, what's wrong with Swedes? As if this woman represents Swedes. And a good example of this is Steve Saylor, who isn't really pro-white, isn't a nationalist, isn't a racialist. Well, you could say he's a racialist, but he's very pro-Jewish rather than being pro-white. His article, he wrote a very short article about this African invasion. Will Africa's northern sea be the Mediterranean or the Baltic? And he quotes someone else, Porter, on Twitter, who tweeted, sobering to realize that decisions occurring right now will determine if Africa's northern sea will be the Mediterranean or the Baltic. And Saylor's flippant comment, the only thing really in his post that's his, is he writes, Sweden's strategy is to make Africa's northern sea the Arctic Ocean. Sweden's strategy. This is a deliberate policy of Swedes in Saylor's mind. That's his thinking on this. And that's common. I think I see this on the internet all the time. I see it when I talk to people about these things. People have no problem smearing an entire subset of Europeans or Europeans and whites more broadly for being responsible for the most ridiculous things. They have no qualms about saying such things about Europeans. But when it comes to the Jews, even racialists, even Jew-aware racialists will say, well, of course, I'm not talking about all the Jews. I'm just talking about the Jews who have power, or the Jews at the top, or the big Jews, or some other stupid qualification. But they don't make such qualifications about whites. Whites are just killing themselves. All whites everywhere for no reason, no good reason. It's crazy. It's just crazy. And in this case, Saylor's description implies that the Swedes somehow control Europe and control the policies of what's going on down in the Mediterranean. Now, there's some truth to what he says, because the Swedes are invaded. They have foreigners from all around the world, especially from the Middle East and from Africa, coming into Sweden with the aid and abettance of their traitorous government. But certainly the majority of Swedes are not happy about that and see their own futures being sold out in that happening. But it brings up another interesting point here. You know, a few months ago, there was a story about how the Swedish military, the Swedish Navy in particular, was following some ghost on their radar. They thought it was some enemy warship or submarine or something. And how absurd it struck me, as the Swedish military is, you know, patrolling the oceans, watching for warships of an enemy nation impinging their waters. Right over their head are thousands every day of unarmed invaders flying into their country. It's like what the what Kirkpatrick said in his article. How did he put it? That Europe still has border security and armies, but it's like a remnant of an earlier time when the idea was that countries had borders that needed to be defended and their people needed to be defended by their government. In fact, that's the government's number one job, is to defend the people of their country. And the fact that European and countries still have navies running around chasing ghosts is kind of emblematic of what's gone wrong and how dramatically things have changed. Another thing about Sweden that this brings to mind is this, the Jewish narrative, the litany of white sins that is repeated over and over and over again, and whether it makes sense or not, in every white country, that the white country is a nation of immigrants, and that in particular about the litany of white sins, that they're responsible for slavery, and they're responsible for colonialism, and they're responsible for lampshading and soaping Jews. It's this thing that gets repeated, this constant drumbeat that white people are responsible for these really major wrongs being done to other non-white peoples, and it has the same elements to it. And in Sweden's case, it's really obvious in its falseness, because there was no slavery in Sweden. There was no colonialism by Sweden. There was no lampshading and soaping of Jews in Sweden. In fact, that Swedish politician had to reach to implicate Sweden in the Jewish Holocaust narrative indirectly by just saying that Jews were transported on Swedish railroads to death camps. That's all you need to do is live in a country that at some time in the past, some Jews got on a train or were put on a train forcibly. And that's it. You've got to give up your country now. You've got to welcome whoever from the world who wants to move there and live next door to you and marry your daughter. The problem with Sweden really is not slavery or colonialism or Holocaust or whatever. It's the fact that it's too white, the fact that it's too Nordic specifically, too Aryan. That's the real supposed quote-unquote problem with Sweden. And that's why the Jewish, Judaized elite of Europe wants to put an end to it and solve that problem.